Welcome to Season 2 of Casinos USA Podcast, Episode 12, Three Casinos in 6 Days. We'll be on our way to Southern Indiana and talking about 36 hours of playing craps and also visiting some really sweet towns. From Pittsburgh, we would be off to Lawrenceburg, Indiana, the Hollywood Casino there, and then drive along the Ohio River down to Rising Sun and the Rising Star Casino Resort, and then downriver even further to a little town called Florence, and then Vivi and the Belterra Casino Resort. That's right, three casinos in 6 days. Anytime someone would be spending 6 consecutive days at casinos, you need to talk about a gambling budget. I might come home $5,000 or more up from a gambling trip, but I will never come home $5,000 down because I have a trip loss limit. A trip loss limit. I figured that I wanted to take $1,200 as my trip loss limit, and I'll go into every game with all the money I have. Hey, if I win $400 in that first session, I'll go into the next game at $1,600. If I lose $300 in that first session, I'll go into the next game at $900. I want to go into the game fully loaded with all the money that I am willing to risk, and really for two reasons. Because if the table turns radioactive, you know, very, very hot, I want to have all the financial resources I can right there immediately to bet big. I also believe that going into a craps game with $1,000 or more gets me more comps, more than not. A female coworker once told me, if my husband knew how much money I lost in slot machines, he might kill me. So I just think about what she said. And my response to her that day was, in my view, you should stop gambling if you're hiding losses from your spouse. And I still stand by that statement. If you want to enjoy recreational gambling, the first step is not to hide what you are doing. What joy is there in that? For Danny and me, a gambling account was the answer. I put money into it, and then I can take money out of it. It's a hobby account. She's aware of what the balance is. She understands that I do not always win at craps, but she also understands that I'm not going to bust our budget or put our family in financial jeopardy. Her chip loss limit was $100 a day on the slots, or $600, and I knew she'd never exceed it, not by a mile. And as you most likely suspect, our trips are never just about gambling, so I figured I would play at the craps table probably about 6 hours daily. I might go 2 hours in the day and 4 hours at night, but there'd be some configuration of time, because part of the day I would be out of the casino on a jaunt with my wife. So that's another thing you have to plan for. How much time are you going to spend on the slots and at the tables? You know what, 36 hours and 6 days, that was plenty of craps for me. So to repeat, agree to a daily loss limit and a trip loss limit. That's big, especially that trip loss limit. And agree to how loosely before you go, how you'll configure the time you'll be there. How much time will be spent on gaming? How much time will be spent on maybe the amenities in the casino hotel? How much time will be spent outside of the casino hotel exploring? Those are all important considerations. You know, leaving downtown Pittsburgh, we cross the Fort Pitt Bridge, and it's interesting because you can see PNC Park, you can see Heinz Field, the football stadium, and you can also see The Point. And you maybe just get a glimpse at the Rivers Casino. And then as you go out of Pittsburgh from the Fort Pitt Bridge, you turn south on Route 79. And going south on 79, within, oh, I'll say 25 minutes, 20 minutes, you'll go right past the Meadows Casino racetrack. So we passed two casinos along the way, and I'm not done yet. From 79, we get on 70 West, and hey, we're right there in West Virginia. And you go a circle around called 470 to get around Wheeling, West Virginia. But from that bridge that crosses into Ohio, you see the Wheeling Casino Island Resort. Oh, my goodness. So we pass the rivers, we pass the meadows, and we pass the Wheeling Island Casino. And crossing Ohio on 70, and probably in about 3 hours, 20 minutes, 3.5 hours, we're circling around Columbus on a circle around. And we're going to pass the Hollywood Casino that's in some proximity to Columbus. So it's odd because we go past four casinos on our way to Southern Indiana. There's just such a proliferation of casinos today, which makes this all the more fun. And soon we're on Route 71 South, heading towards Cincinnati. And we know we're about 45 minutes away from Lawrenceburg, Indiana, when we go past Kings Island, that famous resort. But of course, right now it's closed for the winter, so we didn't see much. So after about a 5.5 hour drive of music and conversation and music, we pull into the Hollywood Casino in Lawrenceburg, Indiana. So in part one of the podcast, I'm going to be talking about what happened inside these casinos. And in part two, my wife will talk about what happened outside the casinos in our visits to the little towns, river towns of southern Indiana. So that's how we'll do it. So first, let's talk about the betting strategy that I used on my first day of play at the Lawrenceburg Hollywood Casino. My first day strategy was very conservative. I was going to be at a $10 table, and that's all I saw at the Hollywood, and I was going to play off and on the 6 and 8. So what I would do is, after three rolls of a new shooter, I would place the 6 and 8 for $12 each. One hit, and I would be off until the shooter made the point or sevened out and the new game started. If the shooter got hot, I was planning on pressing my bets, especially if I found myself with $100 or more in winnings. And, you know, as maybe I should have expected, my first bet bit me. On the fourth roll of a shooter, after I had just placed the 6 and 8 for $24, $12 each, he sevened out. I was down $24 on the first roll that counted for me. However, the next shooter threw a hard 8 on the come out. Oh, that got my attention. So after three rolls, I placed the 8 for $12, but I did that on the pass line, and I want to talk about that. You can place numbers on the pass line. You need to put your chips on the line closest to you on the pass line, but make sure the dealer knows that it's a place bet. Sometimes they'll pick them up and move them to the actual number, but most often they do not. So why did I do that? Instead of making a put bet, why did I make that place bet on the 8? Well, I did it so I could go off if I wanted to, and also if the dice went off the table, I would definitely go off. If I had made a put bet, I couldn't do that. Okay, the other thing was I placed the 6 for $12 in a normal fashion, putting the chips down and telling the dealer to place the 6. Whenever I'm playing off and on a 6 and 8, and a 6 and 8 is either number is the number established on the come-out roll, I also play it the hard way. So in this case, I put $5 on the hard 8 because it was the point number. Well, good fortune, within two rolls, the shooter threw a hard 8. So now I had a total win of $59, which put me quickly in the black. The shooter continued, and I was taking notes because of our podcast, and he made 3 points in his rolls, and he hit the 6 and 8 9 times. I was only on those numbers 4 times because I was playing conservatively going off. So after that, I pressed my win 1 unit, and I was playing $18 on the 6 and 8. So for my first crap session, I was positive the entire way, and I finished with a little bit more than $200 in wins. I went down some, but I never went into the red, and I was very happy. You know, after an hour and a half of play, I finished $216. And you know what? I was in such a good mood. I tipped the dealer $16, which now my craps budget had grown from $1,200 to $1,400. So I was excited about that. The next set, the next day at Hollywood, I played exactly the same way, the off and on 6 and 8, placing the numbers on the third roll after the come out, and also again, placing the hard number 6 or hard number 8 if it was the established point number. And you know what? I finished almost exactly even. I think I gave back $15. So I completed my play at the Hollywood up. I'm going to go with $200. So I felt pretty good. Maybe more importantly, my wife finished $65 up, so she felt great too. And we were off about 15, 16 miles downriver to Rising Sun, Indiana, and checking in to the Rising Star Hotel Casino Resort. The Rising Star, formerly the Grand Victoria, has a lot of gambling features I like, but especially I like the place is well lighted. I really don't like to play craps in the dark. And that's what appeals to me. Also, the dealers at the Rising Star are entertainers. To be fair, the dealers at Hollywood Lawrenceburg were very businesslike, and they knew exactly what they were doing. But they had no desire to entertain the people at the table. Well, the dealers at the Rising Star, it's almost like they're auditioning for an HBO show because they constantly try to entertain you. That positive vibe really was good for me, and I enjoyed that. So after check-in, I went into my first craps game with $1,400. And remember, I mentioned I always use maximum money when I open play. But I put my mental loss limit for the game just at $200. So I would, you know, at worst, be even again. Know that I abandoned the don't pass line if a shooter makes three consecutive points. Well, this is my second strategy. I was going to play the don't pass line, and I was going to abandon it if the table got hot. But this is what happened. I hedged the don't pass line by laying the four for $40. Okay, so that cost me a dollar to do that. So I laid the four for $40 on the come out. I also made a don't pass line bet of $15 and a hard four bet, an all day hard four bet of $5. That was sort of a hedge. So this strategy is going from the don't pass line for $15 on the come out roll, hedging the four for $40, which cost me a dollar to do that. If a seven was rolled, I'd win $20 from that bet. And by also putting up a all-day hard four for $5. So you have that. I'll call that my second strategy. Well, I was fortunate because for the next 50 minutes or so, you know, we had checked in. I was just playing till dinner. No shooter threw a four on the come out. And truthfully, that's just luck. And because I was taking notes for the podcast, I can tell you, in all honesty, I won 10 of 17 games from the don't pass line. I also won three plays of the lay bet. So I won $60 from that lay bet because a seven came up on the first roll three times. That was great. I hit one hard four, so I would say over the course of my 50 minutes or so of play, I kind of just evened out with that. Anyway, I left the game up, $117 up. Not a fortune, but still, now my craps budget had grown to $1,500. I only tipped the dealers $5 because, you know, I only played less than an hour. But the other part of it was not so good. I put $12 in a video poker machine, which was near the table, and I lost it all. I just got crushed on this trip on slot machines. My wife didn't, but I did. All right, after the dinner buffet, I'm back at the tables. And this time I'm going to go with what I call on this trip strategy number three. And strategy number three is also a don't pass or a dark strategy. But I'm playing the Iron Cross from the don't pass. This is one that I found, I pushed it heavily in my book, Craps Across America. Playing the five, the six, the eight, and then making a field bet. And those are all minimums. You know, say the Rising Star has $5 tables. So $5 on the five, $6 on the six, $6 on the eight, $5 on the field. But I opened the game with a don't pass bet of $25. Now, I didn't hedge that in any way. So I took, you know, a chance there, just playing it straight up. And once I got past the come out roll safely, then I would make those place bets and the field bet. And, you know, that's referred to most often as the Iron Cross. Now, here's the choice that I had. How many times was I going to let those bets ride? You know, so I wasn't going to win a whole lot of money betting on minimum amounts of money. So I'd either win $5 or $2. Because if a six or eight would hit, I would lose the field bet. So, you know, I'd get a $7 win, but it was really only a $2 win because I'd lose the field bet. But I'd get something. Any number but a seven would give me something. So I decided, well, I'm going to leave them up three rolls, you know, so I put that money in jeopardy three rolls, but I really wasn't in jeopardy if you think about it, because those bets were hedged by the $25 on the don't pass. Okay, so say I came out of the Iron Cross with $10, $12, you know, then my next choice was, am I going to pull and lift the don't pass bet? Remember, you can lift a don't pass bet. You know, a lot of math nerds would say, why would you ever lift a dumb pass bet? Because, you know, the odds favor you. But sometimes I just call it, like, you know, gaming intuition. I'm saying, this dude's going to make his point, and I'm going to lose $25, you know? And I'm already $12 up, so I know that's a slow strategy, but that's what I did. I only played it for about an hour and a half, and then took a break, went and played video poker with my wife. And so I did a lot of good guessing here. You know, I could tell you there wasn't any logic to what I was doing in terms of lifting a dome pass, but I did lift a dome pass at times, and then shortly afterwards it'd be the dude would make his point. And then there were times I didn't, and then I'd win $25 plus whatever I had won on the field, you know, during those times that I won the 5, 6, 8 field bets on the Iron Cross. So it was good. And I left, it was really a big win for me. I left the table $175 up. Now, I have to tell you that there was not really a hot shooter the entire time I was there. And so I would have gone, because I wanted to go to start playing smart craps. But what was happening there, you know, most shooters did not go past 8 or 9 rolls, and they would 7 out. And so I would get early money from my Iron Cross and then win again. And then I would stop betting that. I would put those off. And then I would win again on the 7 out. I would win the $25 in the dome pass. So that was good. So I was going to go into the night's game for $1,600, because even though I won $175, my second session that night was only $1,600 because I blew another $75 on video poker. I just was cursed in this trip on video poker. So my last session that first night was a very important session. You know, I really wanted to play smart craps from the pass line and see what would happen, because I've been playing conservatively on a 6 and 8 place bet the first day, and then playing from the dark side more or less with a couple different strategies, you know, when I went to the Rising Star. So to close out that first evening, I wanted to play craps the way most people play craps, you know, the smart way. And I decided to stay with the $5 minimum on the pass line. I didn't hedge that in any way. And I thought, well, until somebody gets going here, I'm going to go just with 2x odds. So, you know, I'd have $10 behind it. And that works with everything. So I'd have $10 behind it. And unfortunately, for a while, the table was very cold. But something I like to do, I was placing numbers along with the pass line bet and the odds bet behind it. I was placing the 6, 8, and then I was also placing the 10. And I was placing the 10 because I was making a $5 hard 10. So the regular 10 hedges the hard 10 bet. That's very common with me. And I play craps like that very often at the Rivers when I play from the pass line. You know, place a 6 and 8. I can take it down when I want to. Place the 10, leave the 10 up, place the hard 10. Well, even though the pass line wasn't so good, there was a lot of people not making their points. Finally, after 20, 25 minutes, somebody threw a hard 10, and I was waiting for this on the entire trip. You know, I hit the hard 10, and I said, parlay it. Yeah, I'll repeat that. Parlay it. So the $35 payout stayed there with the $5 I already had on there. So now I had a $40 hard 10. So what I did was I increased my play spend on the 10 by buying it for $20. And that cost me $1, but you know what? That would pay $40. So that would cover you know, the loss if a regular 10 came up. That would cover the loss on the hard 10, which I had $40 on it. Hey, that wasn't big money, but that's just how I think. Well, a 7 would kill me because I'd lose the pass line, the odds behind the pass line, the 6 and 8 place bets, the buy bet on the 10, and the hard way bet on the 10. So, man, this table had to get better. Well, again, I was fortunate because it did. So that was my first big hit of the trip, a hard 10 for $40. And then with the buy bet on the 10, you know, I had over $300 on that win, which was good. So what did I do then? This is a big decision. I didn't parlay it, but what I did do, I pressed it 2 units. So I had a $50 hard 10, and then I also bought the hard 10. I upped that to $25. So that would cover that $50. If a regular 10 was rolled, it would cover the loss of the hard 10, the $50 hard 10. If a 7 was rolled, again, I would get killed. But, you know, I was feeling pretty good, and I don't know how much time, not a whole lot of time went by, and I brought that baby home. So, you know, a $50 hit on a hard way number, any number, is great. So with my buy bet on the 10, you know, that was almost a $400 win. So things were smoking. And there really wasn't – the table warmed up a little bit. I didn't win a whole lot of money from the pass line and the odds bet behind it. But the thing is, I have to acknowledge this, and I want you to think about it. You know, my risk was really on those 10s. And so I didn't want to risk more money, you know, by going 25 on a pass line and $50 behind it. I just figured, well, if I win that, that's a bonus. And when I lost that, I wasn't losing that much money. I was losing $15. You know, I was losing the $5 I had on the pass line and the $10 in odds behind it. And so I could go into the next day's game with over $2,000. So I felt pretty good. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to up the annex a little bit. I'm going to play for a little more money, et cetera. But I have to tell you, I have to confess, my best win on the trip was this first time that I went and played Smart Craps. My worst loss on the trip was the next day. So I gave almost $500 back, you know. And it was just one of those things. I was betting big, you know, high risk, high reward, and the table was cold. So if I'd have been playing from the don'ts, I would have made money. And I didn't switch. I normally would switch, but I thought, you know, I'm going to stay with this strategy. I didn't win any parlay bet. I didn't win bets where I pressed numbers, you know. So if I'd have been playing even 6 and 8 and come down, I'd have been better off. But still, I was going to the Belterra that afternoon with $1,500. And so I'm still up $300 on the trip. I have no complaints. Okay, so let's talk about what happened at the Belterra Casino Resort. This fifth strategy, I know many of you would have never played this, and I'm going to try to encourage you to do so because there's many advantages with this strategy. I also talked about this strategy in my book, Craps Across America. But this is a strategy where you play the minimum bet from the don't pass, so you don't have to worry about hedging for sevens, all right? But you play the minimum bet on the DC, the don't come bet, every roll. Okay, so, all right, so a shooter comes out and the point number, say, is 9. All right, so you have a $5 don't pass bet on the 9. So if someone sevens out before they make the 9, you win $5. Hey, that's no big deal. But every roll of the dice, I have $5 on the DC. So when a number is rolled, let's say the next number it rolled is a 5. Isn't that happen so often? 9 and then a 5, or a 5 and then a 9. Okay, well then what happens is they take the chip from the little DC box close to the dealer and moves it down to the lay area on the 5. And that's going to pay even money. But every roll, you have that. Now, what's appealing about this bet to me, and I think to many others that play it, is if a 7 is rolled, I win of all the dome pass line, but I'll win every DC bet. But if the shooter makes the point, I lose the dome pass line, which only has $5 on it, but I only lose the DC bet that's that number. So if I have a $5 on the 4 as a DC bet, and the point was 9 and someone makes a 9, that DC bet stays up. So you only lose your DC bets when somebody rolls that number. And what's the big advantage? Well, it follows on the come-out roll. Let's say I had, this happened very, very often. Let's say I had 4 DC bets that were up on the come-out roll because they were there from the last, you know, round before somebody made their point. And then consequently, my don't pass line bet was hedged. So I could increase it if I wanted to, because if a 7 was rolled, I'd win $20, you know, from those 4 DC bets, or not. You can also put odds on the dome pass or the DC bets, but I didn't do that, you know, because when you're going from the dark side, you have to put twice as much money almost in every case to win half of it back, and that's a little scary. I've done it plenty of times, but I just didn't want to do it because I knew I had 2 days at the Belterra. And again, I ran into cold tables, and I was just killing the place. I did great. So that's the fifth strategy, and I'd like you to consider all the strategies and learn these strategies. They'll serve you well. You know, again, my big mistake was at the Rising Star the day we were leaving, because I was playing smart craps and I was just stubborn. And even though I'd won so much money the night before playing exactly the same way, I lost and I gave too much money back. But after all the enjoyment of the trip, just from the craps table alone, we would come home $900 up. So, you know, I'm coming home. I took $1,200 to gamble with, and I'm coming home with $2,100. And I actually won more money than that, but I paid cash for everything. And that's important too. So it wasn't like I was going to face big bills when I came home. Now, I was going to have my wife question and answer about the trips, but she just wanted to be interrupted by my questions. So she said she'll be talking about, you know, exploring the casino hotels and also things that you can do and enjoy together as a couple outside of the hotels, or with a group of friends for that matter. So she'll be talking about that. But I wanted to add, because I played so long, even though I was from the dark side, it wasn't like people hated you or anything. You know, I think most craps players are past that, at least where I play. Well, I stopped in a pub while we were visiting Vivi, and we spent a lot of time in Vivi, and she'll tell you all about that. And somebody from the Belterra who was playing there recognized me and said, "Hey, come and join us." So, you know, I did, and I got a chance to talk Kentucky basketball, because Indiana is big time college basketball, but Kentucky's right across the river, and you know, Kentucky certainly is one of the iconic teams the last few years. So we talked a little Kentucky basketball, also talked a little NASCAR, which I enjoy. I don't get too much of that in Pittsburgh. Western Pennsylvania is not really a NASCAR spot, but where I am in Southern Indiana, it's important almost as the Bible, you know. So I really enjoyed that, you know, talking to some strangers, really had to experience their friendliness, that Hoosier hospitality that we talk about. It was definitely there. So we'll take a short break, and I'll turn this program over, this podcast over, to my wife Janie, my beautiful wife Janie. I always say, people ask me, how did she marry you? And she always comes back with, you know, hey, it was a small town. There weren't many guys to pick from. But nonetheless, we've been together for a long time. So I'm looking forward to hearing what she has to say about the trip, exploring things in the hotels and also in the towns that we visited.
Hi, this is Mrs. Fav, Jane. I wanted to talk a little bit about our trips to Southern Indiana, where we visit four small towns and three casinos that take up about a 35-mile stretch for all of them. You cross the bridge from Cincinnati and go into Indiana. The first stop on the trip is the Hollywood Casino and Hotel. The Hollywood is in Lawrenceburg, Indiana, which is the first of the towns. The casino is much like all the other Hollywood casinos, but the hotel and pavilion are quite different. There's a very large, stately, older hotel that has a very nice covered heated walkway up to the three-story pavilion. Now this pavilion has both escalators and elevators. That's where the restaurants, the buffet, the gift shop, and their activities all take place, such as Boogie Nights Dance Club and Hollywood on the Roof. The hotel has parks right beside it. You can walk right from the parking lot across the street and into a park. There's also the Ohio River bordering the background of the hotel, where you can go on a cemented river walkway with a very nice clock tower on it. There's also steps from this walkway that go down into the town of Lawrenceburg. Lawrenceburg has a central park in town that has a very large fountain and also a skateboard park. There are a lot of shops there and some restaurants. There's churches there. We are usually in this area around Easter and always manage to go to church there. As you leave Lawrenceburg, you go through an area to the next town, and the next town is Aurora. But on the way, there's about four or five strip malls, and of course, in one of them is the ever-present popular Skyline Chili restaurant. That's something you really have to try when you're in the Cincinnati area. Once you get into Aurora, there is no casino, but there is a very nice large riverfront park that is lighted, has benches, has playground equipment. There's also in Aurora a very large business district with a lot of shops. As you proceed out of town, the next town that you're going to hit is Rising Sun. Now, right before you get into the main part of town, you will see the Rising Star Casino, which is a large riverboat, and it is surrounded by a large golf course that has very nice pro shop. In fact, I have golfed this course with my husband several times. There's a large pavilion as you go into the casino that has restaurants, entertainers, dances, activities. There's 100 rooms in the hotel that's attached to the casino and pavilion. There's also a newer hotel that sits up at the top of the property, which has another 100 rooms. And there's a shuttle that goes from the hotel to the casino every 20 minutes. The pavilion also at Rising Star has a heated year-round indoor pool, which is really very, very nice, especially now in the winter, because it has large windows and large patio doors, and it's very nice to watch the tugboats going down the river or snow falling as you're in this beautiful heated pool. There's also a gym in the room, a sauna, and showers are there too. So it's very nice, very relaxing. In the good weather, you can go through the patio doors, sit out on the patio that's there, sit in the grassy area, look at the outside of the riverboat, and also watch all the river activity. You can walk to the town of Rising Sun, and we have done that many times, or there is a shuttle that takes you to town also. You can use the riverfront park there, which has a very nice stadium seating amphitheater there. They have a very nice sculpture there. The town has a skateboard park also. There's restaurants and shops also in this town. This town was an example of Hoosier hospitality. We visited the Chamber of Commerce there, and the volunteer working there that day actually invited my husband and I to dinner. And when you're there, you get little samples. We got samples of jelly from some of the farms that were there and some other little samples of products that were made there and brochures of places to visit and other things to see. As you leave that town and drive further down the road, you see all these fields, a lot of cornfields, a lot of fields, farms, and then all of a sudden you see this very high, majestic-type structure and think, what is that? Well, it's Belterra, and that's a very large hotel and casino. Belterra Hotel has 600 rooms, and it's like any hotel in Las Vegas. It's very lovely. It has an outdoor pool there, and there's a Tom Fazio golf course there. There's a complete spa in the hotel. There's a pavilion attached to the hotel and gets you down to the casino. And it houses several very lovely shops, an auditorium, the restaurants, and an activity type center there. And there's also the Chamber of Commerce shop there too, that gives you information on the surrounding towns that I've talked about. And they have brochures on different festivals that might be taking place. The town that is after Belterra is Vivy, Indiana. And that's a very nice town. There's no casino in Vivy, but there are a lot of nice shops and restaurants there. They are host to the yearly Switzerland County Wine Festival, where they have a lot of vendors that come, and just a big celebration for just about a week. Then you can go to the Kentucky Speedway, which is just about 5 miles away, where it's all NASCAR there. And actually, many of the NASCAR drivers, we've met them. They stay at the Belterra when they're there. Okay, I just wanted to touch base on that let you know that there's always activities around the casinos.
Okay, thank you, Jenny, for that trip report. We just had so much fun in this area of Indiana. Southern Indiana, wow, it offers the casino gaming advocate a lot to do and a lot to enjoy. And by the way, if you ever think that I'm there, just yell out, "Hey, Coach Fav, I might see you in the lobby bar across from the registration desk." This lobby bar at the Belterra Hotel is nicer than any lobby bar in Las Vegas. And I've told you, we've been on this trip 60 nights, easy, all right? Just to go to Southern Indiana to experience that lobby bar where they have a player piano, groups play live, they have a huge fireplace, they have also a wonderful traditional bar right out of the 1930s. It's just awesome. The lobby bar at the Belterra is my number one destination for drinking. Oh boy. The details of our betting strategies can be found on our website. That's casinosusa.bet, or on our Facebook page. That's casinosusa. It's a public site, but you have to request permission to join. And that's because you want everyone to do this in English. That was our problem. We had some people posting things in foreign languages and we didn't know if they were un-American or not. So that's why we had to do that. But casinosusa.bet is our website, and right on the first page, you'll see the strategies. Also posted on February 15th on Casinos USA on Facebook. Also would ask you to please consider making a donation, which really isn't a donation, by clicking on our Amazon link on our website. You pay the same amount, but we get a small kickback from Amazon. It helps with our broadcasting cost, which, you know, aren't insurmountable, but, you know, they do add up. We'd appreciate that. You can also make a sort of a karma donation on our website if you're planning to gamble. It's kind of like rubbing the butts on the the old statues of the dancing women in front of the Riviera. I don't know where that thing is now. But anyway, that used to be for good luck. You can have some good luck by helping us a little bit. All right. And as usual, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's the Casinos USA way. God bless. Thank you. See you in 2 weeks.
Hey, every day is Saturday.